It's rather late at night. We are in Bielopolje at a restaurant. Maybe you can hear the music. Very good food, very good music. And I'm here with Francesco Verso, who is an Italian writer and science fiction promoter. And I have some questions that are after an award he got from the fantasy festival in Bielopolje. It's the Golden Dragon Award. The first question is that the usual case is that the science fiction researchers are inspired at a young age by science fiction literature to become researchers. You took the opposite way. Please explain why.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me for this interview. Let's say that to be a writer, you need to have a vision of the world. So in order to develop that vision, you need some kind of maturity. You need to have something to say. And that comes, from my personal opinion, at, you know, some more developed stage of your life. Of course, there are always exceptions to this rule, but normally, and that's a good thing, a writer gets older and it should get better. It's also true that the best things you do are the first things when you are more daring. You try to explore more things. So there isn't really not a rule to become a science fiction writer. You can do it when you're young, you can do it when you're middle age, you can do it also when you're old. So the important thing is that you do a service for the reader. So you have to have something interesting, something that has been not said before. Of course, everything has already been said. We are in the post-everything age, post-truth, post-modernism, post-humanism, post-everything. But of course, the originality, it's in the way you say it, in your point of view. And to have a point of view, you need to develop your own structure of the world, your own image of how life is, and science fiction can help because it can give you the imagination to break through reality and imagine something that still hadn't happened. So this is what happened to me.
So your scientific profession as a worker in the computers world give you some opportunities that you used as a science fiction writer?
It gives me a method of studying, learning what I have to say, sometimes not say what I don't know. Writing is a big phenomenon of exposing yourself. Anyway, you will talk about you will talk about, even though you hide that behind a plot, you hide that behind some characters, but you are dripping into the pages. So let's say that most of the things I've been writing, I didn't know before the idea of the book. So most of the time, I spend a lot of time before writing a single word, researching, doing a lot, reading a lot of literature, whether it's science fiction or is non-fiction about the subject that I have to write. So I had a basic knowledge of things, but every book is a challenge in a way that I have to dig out a lot of information, a lot of knowledge, a lot of research not made by me, but I just put it into a fictional world and try to make it work in a dramatic way. That is the missing part of the research. I don't remember who said that, but science fiction should not predict the flying car, it should predict traffic jams. So you have to understand how technology could be applied in the real world, what could function well, what could go wrong. That's the good, I think that's the skill of the writer, to imagine applications of things that normal you wouldn't think of.
One of the fields that I'm coming from is the fields of personal finance. So the next question is, how can you provide for your family as a science fiction writer? What are the sources of income?
That's very difficult. Let's say that I've chosen the slowest medium at the moment, which is books. The intermediate is movies, and the fast at the moment is video games. But storytelling, it's still the base of every story we tell each other. Of course, in a way, a book is a cheaper thing than a video game. You can do it on your own. But to survive, you need some creativity, in the sense that, well, first of all, you have to lower your expectations on income. You don't do the writer to become rich or famous. You do the writer because you have something to say and you want to contribute to some higher discussion, to some higher argument that is going on at the moment in your mind, and you probably at the global level also as well, on a human level, on a philosophical level. So let's say that I try to differentiate on the sources of income. Is a good strategy, I think. So a part comes from selling books. I go to many book fairs. Then another part comes from translations and the other royalties coming from other markets. And another part comes from publishing other authors. It's not much because my organization is a non-profit cultural association. Of course, I get some cover the expenses and stuff like that. Now, after 10 years I do this, I start to see also some improvement in that. I get invited to talk. I'm turning from a writer into a public speaker. And there is a little bit more money in that. Even it could be strange, but really I really want to stress the fact that you don't do this for money. You just have to have enough to have a decent life, and the rest goes into translation and goes into paying the people that are working with me, the translators, the illustrators, the editors, the proofreaders. I think we have overestimated the value of money for a long time. Of course, it's important. Of course, it's necessary to live. But you can live with much less than you think.
You had a novel translated in English, and I think there's always the possibility to hit the jackpot in the American or the British market, as I saying about your novel to be translated into a movie script.
Again, I don't do it for the jackpot. If it comes, I will be happy, but that's not the reason I write the novel for. Of course, on a bigger market like the US market or the English market, there are more chances to be read by more people. But again, it's like you are feeding your egocentric part, but it's a reward that doesn't come just from the money. The reward comes from the human relations. It comes really from the way that you can communicate with others and share your expertise, share what you understood of life with other people. So, and I still am always in a learning condition. So this is what I think it's the best way to, it's the best job in a way, never ending process of learning, never ending process of teaching, self-improving. Of course, if you do this consistently and with so much enthusiasm and energy, the rewards will come. This is the thing. But if you start thinking about the outcome and the result, you'll probably fail. If you concentrate on the quality of what you do, not thinking about the outcome, I think you have more chances. It's not important where you arrive, it's important you appreciate this process of going, because you will find the rewards along the way, not at the end. This is something I think, but maybe I could be wrong. Everybody has to find their own way to do these things. I know people that write probably 4 novels a year. They have to do it to pay their salary, to pay their bills and stuff like that. I totally respect them, but that's not the way I would do it. I do like 1 novel every 3 or 4 years, because it takes me, that's the way I am, that's the way I like to write books.
Earlier today you said that English language is like a gatekeeper from translations from an European language to the other. How can be this problem overcome?
It's not simple, because of course we have this barrier of understanding each other, so we need this lingua franca to at least try to understand each other, like we are doing in this interview. But this is the first step. As soon as you have understood the value of an author, of a book, you should try to find a way to translate it directly from the original language. It's not so difficult, really. It's not so difficult. I translate from 8 languages, and I have no budget. I do short stories, do novellas. I don't do novels, but really, if we put some quality into publishing, you do less books, but you do better books. The people feel it. The people, when they read it, they stick to that. I have people coming back from previous book fairs and stuff. They are looking for the things we do, because in this very highly competitive market, you need to create a kind of brand. And when I mean brand, when I say brand, I mean something that people can recognize as a quality thing, or as a very clear identity of what you're doing. So, for example, in Italy now, if you want to read Chinese science fiction, if you want to read science fiction from Africa or South America, you come to future fiction. But it's not something you do in 12 months. It takes you some years to do that. So of course I have a bunch of readers from many languages. Sometimes the story comes in English, sometimes the story comes in original language. When you are in this process, it's much more simple to have translations coming, because the people, I mean, the people working with, they understand the importance of this project. I have a waiting list for English language. I have a waiting list for Spanish. Of course, there is also the cost of translation itself, which is important. It's not cheap. But I don't see very big difference between translating a book from English than from Spanish. It's basically the same. It's just a marketing thing. It's changing the mindset of readers and bloggers and influencers to say, look, it's not important who the name of the person on the cover, it's important what's inside the book. So when you are able to create this kind of brand, the people will not, they will look for you and your books, not the name of the author. Of course, then they will look for this author, but as a bigger picture, as a bigger process, as a bigger phenomenon of science fiction coming from different countries. I hope it's clear.
Today, the young generation is consuming science fiction in form of movies, TV series, video games, and comics. It appears that the written book is losing the war with other forms of science fiction culture, or not?
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. But okay, this is a complex thing. It's not simple to answer this question. There are two parts of this. One part is that yes, we're losing readers, but we're getting viewers, we're getting players, we're getting, so in a way the storytelling it's always there. And I am not concerned about the fact that the written word is being filmed or being adapted for a comic or is being transformed into gameplay. What I'm worried about is the quality of things. So when I see Black Mirror, I see top class science fiction. When I play some game like Horizon Zero Dawn, which I play with my daughter, is, of course, there's a lot of shooting which I don't like, but the storytelling behind it, it's very good. It's a very good story. So that's one part of the story. The other part of the story is more dangerous, more slippery, because I make this comparison. Reading is like walking. Watching a movie is like going to a car, and playing a video game is like taking a flight. When you read, you're slow, you walk, you have the pace, the speed to feel the flavor, to feel the smell, to touch the things, to understand what's around you. And it's the same thing that happens in the book. When you watch a movie, you are in the car. You are on a road that somebody set for you. You cannot smell, you cannot hear what's in just inside the car. You have your senses limited by this mean of transportation. So the same happens when you watch a movie. You are on a storytelling set by somebody else. The characters is there. You cannot imagine it. You cannot smell it. You just go with that storytelling. And in the video game, you're even in an airplane, because you are 10,000 feet up in the air, close in a very strange environment where you don't move your head, basically you don't watch nothing, you just go very fast from one place to the other, and it's your nerve system that reacts. It's not your brain, it's not your senses, but of course it takes you very far away and it gives you a very extraordinary sensation to be in a complete different environment, in a complete different setting, the gameplay, you know. But everything is set, everything is made for you. You're just sitting there and experience something that you cannot have any grip on. So what I say to the children, what I say to the university, when I say everywhere I go, is that you have to have all the three experiences. You cannot give up on walking. We still have to walk, and we still have to read. So you should differentiate again your experiences. In this way, you're using different parts of your brain, different parts of your body. You have a better understanding of the world. If you just use the car and use the flight, you become another kind of human being.
Yes, I partially agree with you, but I can be the devil advocate and sure tell you that the gamer experience is much, much more intense as a feeling and a passion that a reader experience.
Sure. But is life always that intense and that passionate? If you live your life at 100% of your energy, you consume yourself And if you live at this kind of intensity, what about tranquility? What about serenity? What about serendipity? What about all the things that you cannot perceive because you're too fast, you're in too tense, too passionate? Life is not about tension, just passion, just that. Life is a mixture of different ingredients. And if you just take one because it's the reward is very fast, you know, you shoot, you kill, or you overcome one level. It's not just overcoming one level. Life has more sides, more angles, more experiences than that. So you're reducing the human experience to one single super intense thing, but who says this is the only one? Who says that it's the most rewarding one? I think you're losing something also in that. Whatever you do, you lose. That's why you have to try to do as many things as possible in order to minimize the lose. Make sense?
Yes, of course. Please give us some details about your Chinese connection.
Okay. Well, I this is funny because I started to read some Chinese. He's not Chinese. He's half American, half Chinese. Is Ken Liu, and he was he writes in English because at 6, 7, 8 years he went from China to U.S. So he grew up in the U.S. and he writes in English. So I've read his short stories and I think he's an exceptional writer. I wanted to translate him in Italian, so I translate his short stories. And I don't know how came, like I asked him about other Chinese stories, and he put me in touch with Professor Wu Yan and Chiara Cigarini, which became our translator from Chinese to Italian. So through Ken Liu, I got to know some people in China, and I had this idea that Chinese science fiction was about to grow because it's a huge country, because it has more than 2,000 years of literature and culture. It's deep, it's ancient, and at the moment is a global exploding power, you know. So they have the means, they have the technology. I call China a big social technological experiment of science fiction. I started to translate the first dual language, Chinese and Italian, in Italy, and it was a small success, in the sense that it's a small book with little money at the beginning. I couldn't distribute, I couldn't print so many copies, but it's a very high quality, and the fact that it's in dual language, it has a very high cultural value, because I went to the Confucio Institute, that is the Ministry of Culture in every country, and I talked to them. I said, look, there's this interesting phenomena in China. Would you be interested in helping me to translate these stories? And they were very helpful. They supported the translators. And in this way, now I have contact with all the Confucio Institute in Italy. And the book was also distributed in, not distributed, but we use it in universities. And the students asked me about the stories, because there's no other literature, contemporary Chinese science fiction in Italian language. On the other side, the Chinese part of it is interesting for the second generation and third generation of Chinese people in Italian, because they don't know nothing about their country. They don't know their origins, their roots. So in this way, they can also read. Many of them, they just speak, but they don't know the ideograms of Chinese language. So it's much more than just a book of science fiction. It's really a cultural bridge between two communities, Italian and Chinese. From then on, I was invited in China to talk about this project. Project is, let's bring science fiction to the countries where it belongs. So every country has a future. The future happens everywhere. We don't always have to pass from one future, one language, the English, one culture, the Anglophone, one economy, capitalist, one religion, the Christian, I would say also one sex, you know, and whatever, one. This is very dangerous. I think it's very dangerous for the representativeness of the future. I think that the biggest richness we have is biodiversity. And if you apply this concept of biodiversity to nature, you can apply it to literature. So if you want to have people with open mind, you have to give them as many futures as possible, told by as many authors as possible. And my work goes in this direction, to try to distribute the future in a better way. I believe that it's the time now to have non-English to non-English translations, because nobody says that we have to pass always from English. I'm talking about big languages like English, Spanish, French, Chinese, German. These languages, you cover a big part of the world. So if you just start from that, you are much better off, I think. Then you can go, you know, and create things also more particular. But at least we have to get rid of this gateway. Not getting rid in a bad way, but, you know, you can have a French translator, you can have a German translator. It's not so difficult, I think.
You said, and I agree, that the science fiction in China is exploding. They have the advantage to being such a big people, such numerous people. And so, hey, they have the possibility to give to the world authors and readers also. But I think maybe in this can be a danger that could China become the new global cultural dominator like is the US now.
Of course. I said to them, I just said it straight in their face. I went to many conferences there and I explained my idea that cultural dominance is wrong. I come from a dominant culture. Romans have been conquering the world, have been spreading their religion, spreading their culture. Sometimes you do good things. We did good roads, administration, laws, but we did also very bad things. So I am against every dominance. We should embrace another kind of multicultural development. We just have to see in the concept of the other a value, not a danger. I think that science fiction has these two big drives, fear and wonder. We've been on the fear side for way too long. Dystopia, post-apocalyptic, the end of the world. Fear. We nurture fear with so many stories. It's time now that we embrace all again the wonder. And in China at the moment, they are embracing the wonder. Of course, there is always also the problem of dystopic storytelling, you know, the control, the party, the problem of checking on people, controlling, censorship, what you can say, what you cannot say. I think we should try to again differentiate is the original, the most important word here. I think at the moment in China, they leave these two things. Officially, they want to promote a kind of positive approach towards progress, using science fiction as a tool to promote the transformation, the innovation, to teach the people the use of new technology. They want to move from made in China to created in China, okay? And this is the official part. But of course, there are writers that are trying to say, is this the future that we really plan? Are we sure that we are going in the right direction? What are we missing for all this progress? Is really capitalism and this very accelerated present they're living the solution for our problems? So they are developing also very mature storytelling like Chen Qiufan and Xia Jia. They are also using their ancient wisdom, their spirituality, to say, we got rich, but what we lost in this process. So it's more than just the kind of new golden age that they want to promote. This kind of, we will conquer the world, we will project a better future for everybody, we'll have this incredible project, the Belt and Road Initiative, we will create go to the space, they send the Chang'e on the dark side of the moon, they have a project for Mars and stuff like that. But on the other side, I say, yeah, but we from the West, we always said that, we always promoted this, we always believed that the GDP was a sort of index of happiness, but now we see what we have, is it really more TVs, more smartphones, creating more happy people? I doubt that. And science fiction had this crisis in the 60s in the US. So they are approaching that moment very fast because everything is accelerated now. So it's really, really interesting because it's a big new player. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, where the cosmists explored the possibilities of the human, the post-human, in the terms of body modification and transformation of our territory, there was a missing voice, I think, because there was no other science fiction on the globe apart from the English and American one. So I'm happy to say you have to take this responsibility, but you have to do it well. Of course, you don't have to exaggerate and pretend to be the next superpower. You want to be the next superpower, but be careful. But they're smart. I mean, they will publish an international science fiction with stories from all over the world. It's a small thing, of course, at the moment we start, but they understand that they... I don't know if it's because of their culture, their spirituality, the idea that the China in the Chinese world is not the center of the universe. They are different. We believe that we are, anthropocentric. Everything revolves around us. They don't believe that. They believe that the mankind is a part of a bigger picture. So I hope that this approach will help them to translate. At the moment, they translate just from English, just like the Americans. I'm trying to push this wall. I'm trying to say, look, other languages are important, other cultures are important. I hope.
At the ending of this interview, a question for Francesco Verso, the writer. What's next?
Oh, yeah. What's next for me?
As a writer.
As a writer. Okay, I've just finished my most important story. It's two books. It's more than 700 pages. And it's a big, big book. It's a big book about solar punk, which I think is the most important trend at the moment is a development of cyberpunk. It deals with nanotechnology, 3D printing, and cloud computing. So it's kind of talks about a change in an anthropological change in the way we live. I imagine that people can use nanotechnology to improve their organism and be independent from the food. Not that they have to stop eating, but they cannot eat. They're not obliged to eat three times a day, but they can eat once a month. And how their life change if they eat once a month. And they share 3D formulas of objects through the cloud computing, so they don't need to buy stuff. And if they're free from food and free from objects, they are free from work. So they start to abandon the cities and start to embrace a new condition. They call the walkers, the people that walk and start to repopulate places that have been abandoned for the urbanization. We've been sedentary for around 10,000 years, but we've been nomad for a much, much longer period of time. So in this kind of book, I try to propose a different kind of civilization that is not sedentary, but it moves with the help of technology that makes them more adapt to this kind of lifestyle. And I see these trends in many ways. For example, the tiny houses. I don't know if you heard about that. People that, yeah. And the vanishing of food. We move from 2-3 plates to fast food, then to finger food, then to, you know, food on the airplane, and then to the distributor machines. And then I push it to the limit. Nanites. That is nanorobots able to assemble protein, vitamin, and carbohydrates, starting from simple elements that you can find, flowers, grass, roots, stuff like that. So then there is a development of 3D printing, which is, I think, very interesting. It's changing manufacturing. Instead of top-down, it's going bottom-up. So if you know how to print a chair, and I know how to print, I don't know, glasses, we can exchange the formula. We don't need to buy the object. So it's a total revolution of the economy. This took me 7 years to write and to study nanotechnology, anthropology a lot. So I've just finished this book. I will promote it as the first Italian solarpunk book, because it deals with artificial photosynthesis in the second book. And I think this is a very interesting movement. I don't know if it will become important as cyberpunk, but I think that with climate change, with the problem of resources, with the problem of post-capitalism, with the problem of working exploitation, we have to imagine another kind of society. It's. I feel it in the air that there is some change. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe this drive, this desire of kind of anarchy, you know, kind of breaking the system. It's always been there from the 70s, from the Cultural Revolution, stuff like that. But at the moment, it's also coming with these huge migrations of people due to climate change, due to war, due to desertification. People have always been moving since the dawn of time. So I think we should change the point of view. Migrations are our future, not something we have to fight.
I feel that this solar punk is a very juicy subject that maybe we will approach in the future. I thank you so much for this interview, and I hope we will meet again.
I hope so. Thank you very much for inviting me, and keep reading science fiction coming from many countries as possible.
Thank you again.